Welcome to The Expert Vet. I'm Tracy Hotchner, here with my co-host, Dr. Donna Spector, who is The Expert Vet. She's a board-certified veterinary internist here to help explain medical conditions in dogs and cats. If you have a problem that's been difficult to diagnose or treat, Dr. Donna can give a second opinion to help you and your vet keep your pets healthy. Email your questions to radiopetlady@gmail.com. The Expert Vet is a production of 8paws LLC and Dr. Donna Spector, which are solely responsible for its content, and is brought to you by Canine Active, a safe, non-toxic pain reliever with a proprietary anti-inflammatory ingredient, Alpha-G, made of naturally occurring amino acids and homeopathic compounds known to provide pain relief in dogs without the side effects and risks of drugs. Canine Active is made in America by the company that makes Amino Active, proven safe and effective for people with pain who want to avoid ibuprofen and NSAIDs. Now there is Canine Active, an innovative formula for dogs to improve quality of life for the canine members of the family. Canine Active, proven safe and a proven pain reliever. This show is also brought to you by Halo Holistic Natural Dog and Cat Foods, which are made from real ingredients you can recognize. Can you identify what's on the label of your own dry dog food? Halo uses real meat in their kibble, no rendered byproducts, chicken meal, or chemicals. And their new grain-free recipes give you even more healthy choices for your pooch's dinner. And Donna's dream for a super low-carb canned cat food has come true. Halo's new pate-style cat food has an amazingly low 5% carbohydrates. Halo is a private company partly owned by Ellen DeGeneres, where they emphasize giving back by making donations to shelters through freekibble.com, because Halo believes less fortunate felines and canines deserve great nutrition, too. Hello, hello, Dr. Donna. How are things in Chicago in the summertime?
Fantastic. I'm so happy to talk to you.
Me too, you. I feel like now that we've gone to our monthly version, I miss you, and I hope that the people listening aren't like, yeah, we miss you too. We hope we've given you enough time to listen to the show, because that was our whole point, is not to give you an avalanche of too many shows to listen to. But this one is super critical because it's the height of summer. And some of us live in really more rural areas like me in Vermont. But even people living in suburbia, if there's any amount of woods or fields, there's a lot of things a dog can encounter which can have either inconsequential or consequential problems. And the usual list is always about hyperthermia and don't leave your dog in the car and things that are like, yeah, well, of course, or sunburn even. But I've been encountering a number of things. I'm thinking, I can't call Donna in the middle of the night, but Maisie picked up a frog. Now, let's talk about frogs in tow. She picked up a frog in her mouth, which many dogs will do. She didn't even try to kill it. And I thought, ooh, frogs, do they have a toxin? Is it a certain kind of frog? I couldn't remember. She let go of it. She didn't have it in her mouth 10 seconds. Saliva began to pour out of her mouth. She shook her head. Saliva was pouring out. I didn't know what to do. I thought, well, maybe she'll walk it off. I thought, well, that's stupid. I'll wash her mouth out. Well, how do you wash a dog? So I tried to splash a bunch of water in her mouth. About an hour and a half later, she vomited several times. So tell us a little about frogs and toads, and what should we know?
Right. Well, you know, many frogs and toads secrete a like a caustic, you know, something that's a very irritating secretion.
Yes.
Or even just have an unpleasant taste to them. And the most common signs, of course, are the salivation, the, you know, if they swallow that, it can kind of give them a burning sensation in their throat. And then actual chemical irritation to the gut, so you can get diarrhea, vomiting.
Wow.
You know, I mean, these things are the real deal.
Yes.
The secretions, although, you know, you think of, like, most of the time it would be the slimy stuff on the surface of the frog. Actually, usually the secretions come from the salivary glands of the toads.
I'll be darned.
So usually they have to get a good crunch of it. Usually, if it's to have a significant toxicity, they usually have to bite into the frog.
Okay.
Or, you know, have the frog release those secretions from, I mean, frogs kind of like they spit it out, you know, they spit out
interesting.
That secretion.
Okay. Yes.
And especially in a defensive, you know, they see a dog coming, they're like gonna,
or they find themselves inside a dog's mouth. It's like time for secretions.
Exactly. So it's not just like, oh, my dog licked a frog. I mean, that's usually not going to cause a major problem.
I see.
But down in more southern, you know, southern and western states, Florida, Texas, Colorado, California, you know, Arizona, the Southwest, those kind of places, Hawaii, of course, there is a very specific kind of toad called the bufo toad.
Oh, that rings a bell.
And some people know these. They also call them cane toads or marine toads or Colorado River toads. They're all this form of bufo toad. And these toads are incredibly toxic. Again, the secretions come from their salivary glands, but it is similar to, you know, like plants that secrete digitalis, you know, like the cardiac, the heart
yes.
toxicities. These toads, I mean, in all honesty, they can cause severe heart rhythm disturbances, low blood pressure, seizures, and death within 15 minutes.
Oh, my God. You gave me a terrible chill. And especially, I would think if your dog was a small dog, maybe even more so.
Because of the,
and the concentration.
The concentration. But also, you know, a small dog isn't as likely to get one of those big toads fully in the mouth.
I don't know. So you've seen it. My sister's Brussels Griffins. I mean, they brought in a dead desiccated toad the other day. But I think even if it was hopping. Oh, my God. We need to take a quick break. When we come back, let's talk about the bufo toad. I think you actually, one of your veterinary partners' dogs picked up one of these killer toads. Oh, my goodness. I guess I'm lucky. I just got away with a bit of puking. We'll be right back. When we get back, we're going to talk about bunny poop and snakes and porcupines. And there is a lot of danger out there, folks. We want you to get out of the house, but we want you to be alert and not only try and avoid these things, but when they happen, know what to do. We will be right back. This show is supported by Spot Platinum, an allergy test that can help pinpoint which elements in your pet's environment or diet may be causing his allergies. Is your dog or cat constantly scratching, itching, licking? He may have allergies that the Spot Platinum blood titer test can detect, and for which they can make a USDA-approved serum that is custom-tailored to your pet's specific allergy results to control his symptoms. Spot Platinum is a privately owned company that has done over 500,000 allergy tests during 25 years, a blood test that measures a pet's reaction to 90 common airborne elements in foods. Their mission is to give reliable results, effective treatment, and unparalleled customer service. For more information, visit them on the web at vetallergy.com. And support for this show also comes from VaxaCheck, a simple blood titer test done right in your vet's office to discover whether your dog is protected from the deadly core diseases or needs revaccination. VaxaCheck is useful on puppies to confirm whether their puppy shots really worked. And shelters can use VaxaCheck on new arrivals to separate healthy dogs from unprotected ones. VaxaCheck eliminates the need to unnecessarily revaccinate a dog whose immune system is already protected. VaxaCheck, for your dog's safety and your peace of mind. And ask your vet about the new VaxaCheck titer test for cats, too. We are back. I'm with Dr. Donna Spector, the expert vet. We're talking about summer outdoor dangers. Talk about this bufo toad encounter that your veterinary partner had.
Yeah, his has a little Jack Russell Terrier.
I'll be
so
darned.
We know how snarfy they can be.
Oh, yeah.
And he was just on vacation. Of course, we live in the Chicago area with no bufo toads. He was in Florida with his dog, and the dog picked up a bufo toad and did bite into it, and within minutes was sort of leaning off to the, off to the side,
God.
Staggering around.
Oh,
obviously, he rushed her to a clinic nearby, and they can give, it's not an exact antidote, but it's something that can help. Her heart rate had dropped extremely low. Her blood pressure was extremely low already.
Oh, Donna.
And so they gave her something an injectable medicine into the vein that increases her heart rate, increases her blood pressure. And, you know, I mean, that for a bufo toad, I mean, again, if it doesn't kill a dog, which can happen within, again, 15, 20 minutes, most of the time they'll recover within about an hour. But it's this heart toxicity. So, I mean, it can be really dramatic.
So this is really serious because often people won't know what happened. They won't have seen the moment of the biting of the toad, the letting go of the nasty tasting toxin. And now your dog has these symptoms. So you have to say if your dog has any symptoms that look that severe, just get to a regular vet or an ER place immediately,
And, you know, these are the unfortunate times that sometimes in the summer, it's not all that hot out. People that live in those areas, they come home and they find the dog dead in the backyard
Donna.
And that's a real, I mean, it does happen. And people are like, oh, the neighbor, you know, we were the neighbor poisoned the dog.
Yes.
And it's like, so if you live in an area that there are bufo toads or frogs, you know, down in the south, you know, you just have to be cognizant that, you know, there are times of year that those are going to be worse than others, and you shouldn't be leaving your dogs outside. You know, be careful when you're around ponds or areas where yes. toads live, because it's one of those things that, you know, 15 minutes can make a huge difference.
That's interesting, because when I had a house in Italy, there were poops outside. The house had shady areas around it, which is true, I mm-hmm. guess, in Vermont, too. So these toads, I guess toad has to do with the size of you versus a frog. I'm not sure. Maybe there's some other way of delineating it. But there were poops in the morning that looked like a cat. And I had three indoor-outdoor cats had pooped. And it was the toad. I mean, enormous poops that you wouldn't think would come out of a toad.
Right.
And they were near the house.
Yeah, bufos are big toads too, yeah.
Wow, I wonder if eating the poop is something dangerous, potentially.
Generally not, because again, the toxin is...
I see, it's in the saliva. So mm-hmm. what about, while we're on the topic of poop, I've heard that bunny rabbit poop can be quote-unquote dangerous, whereas I've never worried about my dogs eating deer poop. Should I be worried? And obviously on a walk, you mm-hmm. can't get down with your microscope and decide if it's bunny or deer. And how do you stop right. the dog once they're licking up the what I call fresh baked brownies?
Right. The you know, poop of any mammal, be it deer, bunny, you know, there is some exposure risk. And the biggest things that we see, deer poop, deer can carry Giardia. You know, Giardia is the intestinal parasite that can cause diarrhea, vomiting, loss of weight, bloating. So Giardia, we certainly see, and rabbits carry Giardia as well. So that's one of the common
wow.
things. Coccidia, which we think of in our puppies. You know, we a lot of times puppies get coccidia.
Yes.
Well, rabbits get coccidia. Generally, though, like the rabbit coccidia passes through dogs. It doesn't tend to be a major issue. Leptospirosis,
no
we've
kidding.
Talked before.
Yes.
That is more obviously, instead of poop, it's more urine.
Yes.
Where rabbits, squirrels, mammals, rodents, you know, these kind of things that they urinate, they can contaminate water. And, you know, and this can be a life-threatening exposure to dogs and to people. So leptospirosis is something that these, you know, mammals can carry in whether it's poop or it's, you know, urine in that case.
And they often exist in the same place because you're always told, well, watch right. out for the standing water or even the slightly running
right.
water because any of these animals could have peed nearby. But often
right.
animals will pee and poo kind of at the same time or in the same
exactly.
place. So
right.
your dog
exactly.
could lick up some urine while just trying to get the delicious poop.
Right, exactly. So, you know, I mean, these are, you know, these are the things. And I would say, oh, deer poop isn't safer than bunny poop. I mean, I think there is... There is exposure, salmonella.
Oh my God!
You know,
God.
With rabbits. So I mean, there
wow.
are things that are always going to be concerned, and cryptosporidium. You know, the list goes on and on
wow.
of things that they can get. So, again, is the risk ridiculously high? No, and many of these things do pass through. But, you know, I tell people don't freak out. You see your pet doing a little munching along
yeah.
the way.
Yeah.
You know, do what you can to
minimize it,
to curb it, and have a pocket of, you know, good treats
yes,
that you can
yes.
distract and move
definitely,
on.
Definitely. That's really good advice. Just to go back to the frog. So, of course, and if you find the dog vomiting or having diarrhea and you've been on these walks, then you have to go be tested for Giardia or so forth, right? Because
right.
you have to eliminate that as a possible cause
right.
or a
right.
probable cause.
Right.
With the frog who wasn't the killer bufo toad, but
oh,
just
right.
an irritating frog, what could I or should I have done?
The best thing to do, and again, it usually is a two-person, very wet job,
okay.
but have you hold the dog
yep.
and spread open the lips of the mouth and take a garden hose and just hose them down, like really spray, aggressive spray right into the mouth to, you know, get all those secretions out of the mouth. And again, you know, one person is usually having to hold the dog because what good dog is going to, even a great dog isn't going to stand there
right.
and let you spray.
And
their
obviously
mouth
you don't want to put it like directly back into their throat and like
no, not
gag
back
them.
Into the throat.
I did try to open her. She was a good dog. I held her mouth open and tried to splash from a water bowl, but that was
right.
not very scientific. I should have really done more of a rinsing job.
Right. And, you know, in the hose, obviously, and put it on a light, you know, don't
right.
do like the crazy spray, but like that light shower that
yes.
you do to your water, your petunias.
Like
with.
A water pick. You want to use the right. equivalent of a water pick in their mouth.
Right. And so that just, you know, with some pressure behind it, so you
yes.
can get some of those secretions, and then take, you know, a small dish towel or some gauze or something and wipe off the surfaces of the membranes.
Wow.
Of their mouth, you know, to get that.
Oh, I was so bad. I didn't do a good cleaning job. And then the poor thing had to barf and wake me up several times in the night. Okay, that's so you, the water, but then some actual abrasion of the inside of the cheeks and the tongue to wipe out whatever could be left.
Right, because a lot of times those secretions have a oily substance in them, you know, so with the water oil mix, it's not going to mix. So, the, you know, wipe it out, then rinse, then wipe, then rinse, then wipe, then, you know, we do it a few times.
So take it seriously. I mean, it's and if you don't have someone to help you, then go to the vet and let them do it. You basically want to irrigate their mouth.
And then the other thing that we can do, you know, when you get to the vet clinic is if a dog has eaten a toad, I mean, because that happens where the whole toad goes down the hatch.
Yes.
We often will do activated charcoal.
I'll be darned.
So that you know, we put it in there so it binds up whatever toxins and the frog bits and pieces that it can get, you know, because it's called a decontamination. You know, we try to, the charcoal will bind the oily substances so that they don't contact the you know, throughout the entire digestive tract.
And anybody with children knows, or was an EMT like I was, knows that activated charcoal is something that you have around in case there's an ingestion where activated charcoal is appropriate. It isn't always appropriate. Sometimes you want to induce vomiting, but in this case, it would be appropriate, but not something to do at home. It's really messy and definitely involves, you know, someone having a good grip on the dog and knowing how to do it properly, right? That's not something
usually
you try
have
on your own.
You usually have to place a tube down the throat because, I mean, there's no way they're going to willingly suck
swallow this disgusting stuff. Yeah.
It's black and, I mean, it's charcoal.
Yeah, it's a nasty mess, but it could be a lifesaver. Because if you had that small dog, even if it's not a killer toad like the Bufo, some of those toxins could make that dog super sick.
Right.
Amazing. Then there's something called an eft. What is an eft? I see these little bright orange. They look all wrong in terms of evolution. Why are they bright orange? Little salamander-looking things a lot in the woods that I apparently turned into newts, but I thought newt was the younger stage of a frog. But these also have some secretions, apparently.
Yeah, the they live in the, you know, like all kind of salamanders.
Yes.
It's more of a salamander thing. You know, they live in the real moist aquatic sort of
undergrowth.
And they're often confused with like the redback salamander, which is not dangerous.
Oh.
But these ones are, you know, completely bright orange red, but they have a yellow belly usually.
Ah, okay.
And that's it. You know, I mean, as far as the actual toxicity, you know, I don't know if it comes from this secretion or that secretion, where exactly it comes from. But again, I think your whole point is if, you know, your dog is picking up this little red dangly, you know, looking salamander, chances are it's going to have, you know,
a bad effect.
And it's not something like the Bufo, to my knowledge, that is going to cause severe heart toxicity and death, but more of the contact, you know, the contact salivation and, you know, and vomiting sort of experience.
So to understand that, you know, it's not cute or funny, or don't even just feel bad for the eft, do something about it, get it out of the mouth as soon as possible, or discourage them from doing it.
Right.
Which brings us to snakes, which, you know, obviously people who live in the kinds of areas that you mentioned earlier, like California, Texas, Arizona, have rattlesnakes and maybe even, I don't know, cobras or not cobras, probably. Yeah. I'm an idiot about what snakes are where, but I know that I saw rattlesnakes in California when walking my dog. But there's even some snakes that have a bite that may not be as deadly as a rattlesnake, but along these lines could be pretty serious.
Right.
Is that something that people need to educate themselves about geographically?
Yeah, I mean, and that's exactly right. When if you're moving into a new area or you're just getting a dog and you live in an area, you know, find out what sort of snakes are in the environment. Familiarize yourself with what they look like, the patterns on the snakes. Some of them are very similar you know, they look similar, but, you know, the red coral snake, you know, is incredibly toxic versus something else looks very similar.
But it could be a garden snake happily eating your mosquitoes.
Exactly. So I think that's the most thing is just educating yourself about what's in your area. And then also, if you're an avid hiker, biker, walker, wherever, you know, in knowing the lands, you know, the lay of the land, and also knowing, for example, if you hike in a certain area, you know, contact that local veterinary clinic, you know, a local veterinary clinic in your area and say, hey, just to make sure, do you carry rattlesnake antivenin? because that is, you know, is a huge life-saving, you know, product. And so snake bite is really, really complex. It's the severity and the type of damage done by the venom of the snake. It definitely depends on the type of snake involved, how old the snake is.
Oh, interesting, because the potency of their venom changes?
Changes. The size of the pet who is bitten, little versus big,
right,
obviously. And also the location on the body where they were bitten. You know, are they bitten in, around the face, you know, the face, head, neck, near
the spine?
Much worse,
right?
Yep, near the spine, up near the back, you know. And a lot of strikes are on the limbs. So if a snake bite is on the limb, the people often put like a tourniquet on or an ice pack to try to localize the venom.
And that
is absolutely not the right thing to do.
Great.
Because what happens, especially on the limb, I mean, those are the kind of dogs that are going to end up with an amputation. Because what happens is that makes the severity, the venom is so toxic that it's right there. And it's almost unsalvageable.
Donna.
If we've tourniqueted or ice packed. So one thing I would, the most important thing if a dog is bitten is to keep them quiet and calm. Because the more they move around,
the more they circulate their blood.
The more they circulate the blood, the venom is going to go into the system. So we want to keep them as quiet, calm as possible. So that takes a cool, calm, collected owner.
That's right. That's right.
But keep the dog, don't let them walk. I mean, try to pick
carry them
up
to
wherever
the best,
they are.
Yeah, depending carry on their size.
Exactly. Or again, if you're a major hiker, have something maybe you'd be able to pull them with, but you don't want them to walk. But you also don't want to ice pack it or, you know, cut off the circulation, because then that will destroy those tissues without a doubt.
Wow. That's interesting. Now, again, just to, before we take another break, again, in Italy, there were they called them vipers, viperi. They were small garden-looking snakes, mm-hmm. I mean, to a New England-looking person's eye. Mm-hmm. And they apparently had venom, and they could kill animals or even people, again, depending mm-hmm. on where you were struck. So the veterinarians, and I believe even the doctors in the local hospital, had anti-venom, but they also sold these anti-venom sting kits, which mm-hmm. kind of had like a vacuum suction. I don't know if we sell them in America or if it's a good idea, but you could put it over the bite where there was a severe wasp sting or mm-hmm. a venom bite, and it caused a kind of, I don't know, negative pressure and kind of pulled the skin, if you will, up into the chamber. Is that anything we do in America, or is that something kind of primitive?
Yeah, I mean, it's that whole like suck out the venom
thing. No.
You know, and also people used to like, wherever the dog was bitten, they would make incisions and then sort of like try to suck it out and spit it out. It's not recommended anymore. We know the dynamics of the venom. I mean, that's, you know, usually going to be very ineffective. I'm not familiar with the vacuum assist ones. I mean, I could say there might be some utility to that, but it's not something we don't.
I've never actually seen it. And in fact, when you're trying to do it, you're such a nervous wreck that, you know, it's not all that effective. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk about porcupines and skunks, oof, and also small rodents and birds that your dog might pick up, and then you see there's maggots in them. It makes you want to vomit, but I'm sure that there's something that could not be good about that. We are discussing summer dangers. I'm here with Dr. Donna Spector, the expert vet, and we will be right back after this quick word. This show is supported by Spot Platinum, an allergy test that can help pinpoint which elements in your pet's environment or diet may be causing his allergies. Is your dog or cat constantly scratching, itching, licking? He may have allergies that the Spot Platinum blood titer test can detect, and for which they can make a USDA-approved serum that is custom-tailored to your pet's specific allergy results to control his symptoms. Spot Platinum is a privately owned company that has done over 500,000 allergy tests during 25 years, a blood test that measures a pet's reaction to 90 common airborne elements in foods. Their mission is to give reliable results, effective treatment, and unparalleled customer service. For more information, visit them on the web at vetallergy.com. And support for this show also comes from VaxaCheck, a simple blood titer test done right in your vet's office to discover whether your dog is protected from the deadly core diseases or needs revaccination. VaxaCheck is useful on puppies to confirm whether their puppy shots really worked, and shelters can use VaxaCheck on new arrivals to separate healthy dogs from unprotected ones. VaxaCheck eliminates the need to unnecessarily revaccinate a dog whose immune system is already protected. VaxaCheck, for your dog's safety and your peace of mind. And ask your vet about the new VaxiCheck titer test for cats, too. We are back. Dr. Donna, summer grossness, summer dangers. Can we just do the critter who the flies have laid eggs in, which are now maggots,
yeah.
And like, ugh, what should we know about that other than...
Well, honestly, it is one of the lesser evils. Maggots actually have a very thick cuticle skin. You know, their skin is very thick, and they most often pass through a pet's digestive tract untouched. So they come
thank
through
goodness.
Whole. But the bigger concern in that situation is the rotten carcass that they were attached to. So if that was a dead rabbit that was found, a dead bird that was found, a dead whatever, you know, then you have the concern back to Salmonella, Cryptosporidium. You know, the possibilities of the dead creature, what could it have carried? And also just the fact that it's rotting, disgusting, dead meat. And, you know, so that's going to cause its own amount of digestive upset, you know, vomiting, diarrhea, et cetera. But the maggots themselves actually usually pass through unchecked, and they can actually, interestingly, carry some botulism.
Oh, lordy.
The bacteria botulism.
Really?
So if you got a huge load of maggots, it's possible that your dog could show signs of botulism. But more often than not, you know, they get a mouthful of maggots and they go through and it's not that big of a deal. But the dog's usually going to have some evidence of GI upset because they were eating dead, rotten meat.
Well, one of the things that Maisie has found, besides the occasional dead maggoty mole or small bird, she found a baby goose, but it was long gone. And it was a great treasure. So getting it away from her, the last thing I wanted to do was actually have to physically deal with it, but it wasn't easy. So the longer she held it in her mouth, I thought, oh my God, I don't want to inspire you to try to, you know, like eat it. It was big. Eat it down. So you again have to have, as you said, that great that Burger King, the whole burger that might be available. So they'll give up the really disgusting thing for something even more delicious.
Well, and I think that also it comes to play the really importance of the leave it command.
Yes, ma'am.
In
yes,
training.
Ma'am.
And, you know, as desirable as it is, you're still the boss and you can tell them to leave it. And they a really well-trained dog will do that, and then you reward them, you know, with something that they can have. So,
yeah, just like when you're teaching
it. Summer is no more important
than that's right. That's true. But somehow the grosser things seem to happen in that department in the summer.
Right.
And of course, the really good teaching in the leave it command is to give something better. And sometimes that's maybe just a better toy. Other times you should have a handful of, I don't know, hamburger meat or, you know, open a can real fast and put it in your, something they can smell is delicious, not just a biscuit, because it's not better than a dead baby goose, according to Maisie, and she knows what's what. Porcupines. I have not had the horror of it, but it happens to people a lot, and the porcupine quills often will go in the dog's face, lips, neck, body. They have a barb on the end, right? So that one should not ever attempt to pull them out themselves. Or is that right?
Yeah. Yes. I mean, they're hollow, but they do have a little barb on the end. And so a lot of times you have to push them in to dislodge it and then pull them out.
Like the hook on a fishing line.
Exactly. You kind of have to unhook it and then pull it out.
How do they teach you that in vet school?
Well, that's just, you know, it's all trial by fire. You know, you're on an emergency rotation and all of a sudden here comes a dog with 1,000 quills.
Oh,
you're
geez.
Like, oh, my
oh
gosh.
No, not on my rotation.
Trial by fire for sure.
Oh, boy.
But I think the most important thing is that I've had owners pull quills at home, and there's a difference between like 3 quills on the end of the nose because like the little dog got, you know, versus a big dog who bites a porcupine and has 300 quills in the mouth.
Yes.
So again, severity and dose of quills.
Right.
I mean, if you've got a few quills, like just superficially on the face, you know, on the face, you see 3 or 4 of them. If you're not too squeamish, I mean, yeah, you might be able to, but they're extremely painful to remove. So you as an owner are at risk of being bitten, even if you have the nicest dog and
that's
it's only
2
quills. I mean, there is a major risk to yourself because the dog is going to be painful. They're not going to want to sit still. And so, I mean, quills to me are like veterinary only, and we do it under heavy sedation or even general anesthesia.
Wow.
Especially the ones that are in the mouth because, I mean, one, if you've got 35 quills inside the lips, there's no way a dog is going to sit there and let you do it. And
That's right. You know, that's right.
And also, you'll create more damage and tissue trauma because the dog's going to be jerking away.
That's right.
So heavy sedation, general anesthesia, obviously understood. That's not cheap to do. And dogs don't learn. They'll be back out bustling the porcupines yet again. So, you know, I mean, I know a lot of people were like, oh, we want to save money. We don't want to go in. But it's painful. There's a risk to an owner to do it themselves. Painful for the dog. It's best done to do it correctly to get them under general anesthesia, especially if it's a whole mouth full of quills. Now, interestingly, quills on the face, obviously, if they're close to the eye, then that's its own threat.
Yes.
But if they're not, like the bones and the face are actually good and protective because they prevent the quill from like going inward.
Because there's bone behind this.
There's bone underneath it. Versus if the dog's body gets quilled, anywhere on the body, on the back, on the stomach, on the legs, these quills often migrate. They go in and they can migrate. I've had quills pop out near the spine, near the rectum.
Because they weren't removed?
They weren't removed properly.
Oh my God.
We've had, as crazy as it sounds, some clients cut them off.
Oh, because they don't know any better.
Right. And so then they're like, you know, so these things, I mean, it can be a major issue. So again, don't cut them. Don't cut them. Try to see your vet to get them removed from a safety standpoint. And again, if it's one quill, then
maybe as long as you know you got the whole quill out. I mean,
push forward and pull out. You know, but again, there's just a real risk.
And if it's just a few, it's just going to be a more simple vet visit.
Right.
Seems to me that vet only needs to be the sort of the message there. Now, skunks are another one. Many dogs encounter skunks, and even in suburbia, you don't need to be full in the woods.
No,
and I thought there was just the issue of the smell. And in the dog Bible, I have the recipe. It's quite easy and cheap. Mm-hmm. And forget tomato juice, by the way. That's just a myth. And it's a mixture of the peroxide and the baking soda and whatever. And it works quite well. However, one of my mini donkeys, when they first came, I didn't know what had happened, but her whole soft muzzle was burnt and peeling looking. And it wasn't until the vet went home and his wife said, "You don't smell right, honey," to realize that she'd been hit by a skunk at enough of a distance that she didn't smell 100% like skunk, but it had burned those delicate areas. Is that something that the skunk spray can do?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it can be in the worst, of course, again, is because most of the time dogs are going to get it in the face.
That's right.
So we often see it being sprayed into the eyes.
Oh, boy.
And that spray is an oily substance. It's an oily, toxic substance. And we often will get severe eye burn, like corneal ulcers.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, the whole surface of the eye can be burned. And then, of course, the dog's going to rub and blink. And, that is certainly, and also on delicate skin. I mean, we definitely can see a dermatitis and inflammation and burn of the skin.
So if you have like a pit bull, like absolutely no fur, and maybe a light color, they can it can be like a caustic burn.
Right. Yeah. And so, but that skunk oil, because it's a spray, but it is truly skunk oil. We can see all sorts of corneal ulceration, you know, conjunctivitis, inflammation in the eye, you know, and obviously the skin stuff is not as life-threatening, but it's not as painful or dangerous to vision, you know, as like getting it in the eye.
Yeah, because the corneal ulcer in people, it just takes a few hours before you
like a good first aid kit is having eye sterile saline solution.
Oh, that's a good one.
Eye rinse, so you can actually rinse out the dog's eyes. You know, you don't want to use a water from a garden hose or anything. You want to have a sterile eye solution, an eye irrigating solution.
Right. A good sized bottle, and they're not that expensive.
Bottle.
And it's not what you wash contact lenses with. It's just sterile saline.
Yeah.
That's a really good thing to have for any sort of thing where you think your dog may have gotten something in their eyes. I don't have that in my emergency kit. Okay. Just to wrap up, stings. We all know that wasps and bees and sometimes dogs and people find ground bees. I've had that happen, and they're very aggressive, and they go after you.
Mm-hmm.
I've always said to people, keep Benadryl in your medicine chest, and for a large dog, give like 2 tablets. But you still have to be on high alert because you may still need to go to the vet if those signs and symptoms begin to perhaps interfere with breathing. So Give us a little 101 about that.
You know, all bee and wasp sort of stings are going to cause pain and swelling at the site because the venom contains, it's like a relative of formaldehyde.
Really?
It's called formic acid. And so there's always going to be a local reaction. But most often, veterinary care is not necessary. A pet owner, you know, the first thing we say is you get a sting, check the site of the sting immediately and use like the blunt edge of the credit card or a blunt knife or something to swipe it over the area to remove the stinger. Now, wasps, yellow jackets, and hornets have stingers without barbs, so they don't leave their stinger in. But honeybees, ground bees, they have barbed stingers, and they actually leave a venom sac
in
there. So removing that whole thing, because the venom sac releases over several minutes. So again, you can lessen the severity by getting out that stinger and venom sac. As soon as you've gotten the stinger out, if it was there, do a cold compress. So as opposed to a snake bite, you can do a cold compress or an ice pack. Then clean the area with soap and water and immediately apply like a cortisone cream. Again, it should be in
That's a good one.
Apply cortisone cream to decrease the inflammation. You could also make a paste of baking soda and water.
Okay.
That works. But, you know, most people have cortisone cream, so just smudge that on there. And then take an antihistamine. For Benadryl, again, it's great to have in a pack. If your dog weighs 50 pounds, they take 50 milligrams. If they weigh 100 pounds, they take 100 milligrams.
Oh, that's so good to know.
1 milligram per pound. If you're 5 pounds, you take 5 milligrams. If you're 10 pounds, you know, so it's
that's
an easy
very
calculation.
Good to remember.
But if a pet is stung around the head, the mouth, the nose, the throat, especially if you've got like a pug type dog, brachycephalic or a pug, or if you have a dog who is stung multiple times, like they disrupted a nest, they went through a swarm of bees, you should seek veterinary care because the fact is those dogs are going to have a ton of venom all at one time. It's going to be a huge venom risk. That is the kind of exposure that could lead to anaphylaxis. And actually death. I mean, that, you know, if they're stung around the head, nose, and mouth or throat, it could cause swelling so they can't breathe. But if they have multiple stings,
they'll close down their whole windpipe.
Well, in multiple stings, just because the amount of venom that's in there. So it's those are the kind of cases when they're really a lot around the head, mouth, nose, especially with a brachycephalic dog. Or if you have multiple stings, those are likely the dogs that are going to have much more of an allergic reaction.
And just to remember, whether it's yourself, your child, or a dog, or a cat, I don't know, I guess cats can take Benadryl, but certainly yourself, any child, any human, take the Benadryl if you have it in a liquid form, like children's allergy medication. Take it even if you're on the way to the hospital for yourself or on the way to the veterinarian's office. It will begin to calm down the histamine reaction. You need bigger guns and bigger medicine, but don't delay giving it because it, it could be life-saving. Donna, this is great. Now I'm completely going to not go for another walk for the rest of the summer. I'm completely scared. Oh, my God. I'm only kidding. But it's great to know what the risks are and wonderful to have you explain them very clearly, what they are and why they are and what the solutions are to those potential problems. So walk safe, be smart, keep your eyes peeled. And thank you, as always, for being the expert vet, Dr. Donna Spector.
Thank you. Take care.
Hey, it's me, Ellen, and if you know anything about me, you know I love my pets. And if you've been reading my diary, you know I had a crush on Donny Osmond. Anyway, I love my pets so much that I'll only give them Halo. It's premium quality, nutritious, natural dog food. Really, read the label and you'll see. Halo is my pet food company, and we care about what's in the bag and what's not.
Halo, the number one selling natural pet food brand, using only real meat, never any meals. Halo is available at Petco, Whole Foods Market, and your local pet specialty or natural food store. Visit HaloPets.com.